Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So we just ended the season of horror, all the good horror TV shows and horror movies and new releases and stuff. Have you gotten into any kind of new horror, just any kind of new TV show as of late?
Oh, well, I'm a big horror movie fan, so I've been watching a lot of horror movies. I guess just this past month in October, I saw Smile. I went to the theater and watched The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. I watched all the Halloween movies.
Nice.
Recently. Like, I don't know what possessed me to want to watch them all, but I did. So I just finished. Not just finished, but I guess the last spooky movie I've seen was Halloween Ends. So that kind of ended my October.
I would argue that's probably the least scary of all the Halloweens. Like, I think that Michael barely had a kill count in that film.
I will say, so I loved Halloween Kills. I thought that was a good one, like how it was. And I just feel like, I think it's okay if you say you're going to make a trilogy and then you just stop or you wait longer. Like, I feel like studios should be like told it's okay. You don't have to be obligated to make another movie if you don't have a really great idea. This felt like it just didn't have like a good idea. Or do you think people were really pumped about it?
I think it was fine. I think the thing is who made it. So Blumhouse, and I'm going to actually link it in the notes. There is an interesting, I don't know if you've ever seen the Wisecrack YouTube channel, but they talk awful. They talk a lot about like pop culture and stuff like that and what's going on in the news. But then they do a really like deep analysis and kind of cross-reference it to philosophers and stuff like that. They did one on Blumhouse and why Blumhouse has been so successful, because horror movies kind of died, I guess you could say. I don't know if I'd say died, if that's the right term, but they lost their zest. And then Blumhouse came around and have made so many movies that have been super popular. I mean, some have been hit or miss, but they've been super popular, but a lot of their stuff is more on it's like everything they do is supposed to be analogous to like some kind of social thing. So like Halloween Ends is really about trauma, and a lot of their other movies are like that too, and they make a really good point about it, like how Blumhouse does. And that's why, so I think that's just Blumhouse's style, is that everything is some commentary or some kind of commentary on something larger in the world.
I guess so. I mean, Blumhouse is doing okay. Like, their horror is good, but man, when I think of horror, I think of like, if A24 is coming out with a scary movie, I am for sure seeing it. Did you watch Bodies, Bodies, Bodies?
I have not. It is on my list.
Oh man. It's such a great, don't find out anything about it. I think like the colder you go in, the better. It's just such an interesting twist on the genre.
They did The Black Phone, which I thought was probably one of my favorite horror films of the past few years.
Oh, man. Yeah, The Black Phone was so good. Have you seen Barbarian?
I have not.
Do you have HBO Plus?
I do, so maybe I should. I'll
or
go
HBO
look
at Max, HBO, sorry, HBO Max.
Yeah, I'll go look up later. It's what's it called again?
Barbarian. I don't think that's an airplane movie.
I mean, I could just watch it here. I usually don't watch movies on planes anyway. I either play video games or something like that.
Oh, I'm totally a movie guy. But it has to be like the right movie, you know. No Final Destination.
Fair.
And it can't be sad, because I'm a crier. If something sad happens, I'll cry. And I don't like to cry next to a stranger.
On international flights, I'll watch movies because you have like 12 hours to kill. So it's like, okay, whatever. But like on domestic flights, I usually just read or play a video game. I'll have to give that a look. I know Blumhouse has one called Megan coming out next year, which seems like it's Chucky, but like a reverse Chucky where the doll is an AI or something like that. And it's not trying to kill the girl, but instead it's trying to protect her by killing everybody around. So it kind of seems like a reverse Chucky, but it looks interesting.
That movie looks good for all the wrong reasons. You know, like, I don't know why I want to watch it, but I really want to see it.
I have been watching the Chucky series on Sci-Fi. I binged the whole first season, and now I'm watching the upcoming season, and I'm up to date now, and it's pretty good. It's definitely better than the quote-unquote reboot with Aubrey Plaza, because this one is at least canon to the other movies, which is something to say, because there's very, very few horror films that have been able to maintain their canon throughout all these years, whereas the Child's Play, except for that one-off that they did with the Aubrey Plaza, the Child's Play films are all in the same canon, and it's all Brad Dourif voicing Chucky and all of them, so.
Yeah, I didn't like the remake, but I do enjoy, like, Cult of Chucky and Curse of Chucky. I really like... I'm not a big fan of the, like, the Bride of Chucky or the Seed of Chucky. I mean, it's like peaks and valleys with Child's, like... Most of the part, if it's a Child's Play movie, I'm into it. And then when they start being mm-hmm. called the Chucky movies, it loses me a little bit. But isn't... The last one is called Cult of Chucky, right?
The last film, yes. That and Curse of Chucky were direct-to-video. But they had a way smaller budget, but they were definitely better than Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. Though those, they've kind of had a resurgence. I don't know if it's like one of those ironic liking of a film or whatever, but now a lot of people are starting to think fondly of it, even though those movies were absolutely hated when they were originally released.
Which ones? Sorry.
Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. Though Bride of Chucky did have some redeeming factors to it, Seed of Chucky was just terrible.
Oh, yeah. But, man, I feel like, though, the Seed of Chucky had, like, a resurgence with people.
Yeah.
Like, it found its, like, it fan base. And I know Season 2 has that character in it from Seed of Chucky.
Yep.
So, I know people were, like, very into that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have to check it out. Maybe that I'm going on a flight soon, so maybe that will be. Wait, I don't know where I could download it though. Is it on a streaming thing?
Oh yeah, I think they're all on either Hulu or Peacock right now.
Oh, I have that. I have both of those.
Yeah, and then I also caught the Hulu remake of Hellraiser. Hellraiser was a franchise that I was familiar with, but I didn't know much about. Like, I knew the concept of the puzzle box and the Cenobites and Pinhead. And if you complete the puzzle box, you summon Pinhead and he tortures you. He and his Cenobites torture you and stuff. But I didn't really know much about the, I guess what, there's like 8 or 10 films in the franchise now. So I did some research after. The movie in and of itself was pretty good. Like, I never actually, I'm looking at it as a standalone film because don't know much about the franchise, so I can't like compare it to the original or anything. I have seen the original. It was pretty good. But beyond that, we're looking at it. I'm looking at the history, and apparently like they did that franchise dirty. Like, it was good up until a point, and then when like another studio bought it, they essentially just screwed it up. Like, that's the best way to say, like, I think they were saying like Hellraiser 5 and 6 were Hellraiser in name only. It was one of those things where it was clearly it was a script for another movie, but then they just shoehorned the Cenobites into it. It's kind of like, you know, 10 Cloverfield Lane was originally supposed to be a different movie, and eventually they just decided to put it in the Cloverfield universe.
Yeah, though I hear we're getting another Cloverfield movie, like a direct sequel to the original Cloverfield.
Interesting. I wouldn't. I might see that. You know the movie Overlord that came out a few years ago where, like, the zombies in Nazi Germany or whatever?
Was that supposed to be a Cloverfield?
That was supposed to be a Cloverfield film, but then they decided to not make it a Cloverfield film, especially because... What was the Netflix movie that just, like, dropped, like, with no announcement? They just randomly dropped onto Netflix.
Cloverfield Paradox. Yeah.
Yeah, that one did so horribly that they just, that I guess they decided, yeah, whatever it was going to be called, Cloverfield Overlord or whatever, they're just like, okay, we're just going to make it its own thing now.
Though, honestly, the Cloverfield Paradox does explain, like, that movie basically makes it so that you could do any movie in the Cloverfield world, and you just be like, well, this is just a different, like, dimension or a different time, like, this is where this one thing happened that changed everything in this universe, because it's like, I think that was the paradox, like, things were merging together, shifting, like, timelines are shifting or whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, like the universe is merged or something weird like that. But yeah, I think I didn't. I mean, I saw the movie; it was fine. I didn't think it was great. I saw the movie; thought it was fine. It wasn't great. But then there was 10 Cloverfield Lane. I thought that was a great film. I didn't care for how it ended. But it is what it is.
You had to have the aliens.
Yeah.
Would you have liked it? Sorry, spoilers for 10 Cloverfield Lane. But would you have rather had it where it was just, like, in his mind? Or, like, nothing?
Yeah, that would have been... I thought that would have made it more suspenseful. Because I feel like it just negated the whole John Goodman's character being crazy. I feel like it just negated it all because it turns out... Oh, he's actually right. Like, he's also kind of abusive and stuff, but he was right. There are aliens, and they are taking over and stuff. I was not a fan of that. I thought it would have been better if it was just, like... I don't know, maybe if it was something else altogether. Like, I don't know, maybe there was a chemical leak or something, and that's why that one lady appeared burned or something. But beyond that, nothing. Like, nothing was actually happening.
I will say, though, like with a cast of, like, three people... That movie has, like, those three people are amazing. Was it John Goodman, John Gallagher Jr., and oh my gosh,
Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Yes. Like, those three actors really make that movie. Like, I don't care what the next John Goodman movie is, he needs to win an Oscar. Like, we need to just give it to him, right?
I 100% agree. I feel like John Goodman is one of those actors who's just never really gotten the due that he has earned. Like, he is an amazing actor, and the amount of Oscar nominated and amazing nominated films that he's been in. The fact that he himself has never won an Oscar or got the dues that he is owed. Is just crazy to me.
I don't know. I wouldn't say John Goodman is a character actor like Philip Seymour Hoffman is, like, where you lose him in the character. But, like, when I see John Goodman, I always see John Goodman, but I believe he's whatever he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, I just believe that that's John Goodman, but I always think of it as John. Am I making sense? We're like, I still see John Goodman, but I believe, like, John Goodman could be that character.
Yeah, I do feel like he kind of vanishes. I mean, yes, I still know that I'm looking at John Goodman, but I think he vanishes in the characters pretty well.
Yeah, John Goodman is just a phenomenal actor. He doesn't have a movie coming up, though. He's, like, doing lots of TV.
Well, you know, John Goodman, I don't know we're doing this episode, but he was a guest voice on King of the Hill episode Serpent, which is a much later season, I think, like, season 12, season 11, something like that. But John Goodman has done King of the Hill.
Oh, John Goodman. I hope he gets an Oscar. He deserves some. What, has he won anything?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But we can, I think he's definitely won stuff or at least been nominated. But he's won Emmys or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Golden Globes. Oh, and an Emmy. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yep, Golden Globe and an Emmy. But yeah, let's jump into it now and figure out what happened to Debbie Grund.
Yes.
So this episode is High Anxiety, Season 4, Episode 14. It is the follow-up to the previous episode that we saw. What was that episode? Hanky Panky. So just to recap what happened, Buck and his wife, Ms. Liz, were preparing to have a divorce because Ms. Liz was just tired of Buck's ways and cheating on her with Debbie and all that stuff. Ms. Liz takes over Strickland, downgrades Debbie to the worst job ever, and upgrades Hank to manager. But it's clear that she just wants to use Hank as a boy toy and try to get even with Buck. Buck also sells, quote unquote, sells Sugarfoot's, his barbecue restaurant, to Hank because, hey, his wife can't take 50% of something he doesn't own. And now Peggy decided to make it her own restaurant because, of course, Peggy. Debbie is trying to sleep with Hank because she wants Hank to protect her from Ms. Liz. Hank rejects. Debbie decides to tell Peggy anyway, or at least threatens to tell Peggy to get back at Hank. Hank is trying to stop her. And the episode ends with Debbie being shot. And now we're going to figure out what happened. So we're in Debbie's apartment. Hank's in there. He's just kind of hanging out. And he's like, how long is it going to take for Debbie to finish her laundry? Gail, the roommate that we saw previously, is like, oh, she'll be back at any minute. She told me that you two are going to hook up. And Hank's like, no, we certainly aren't. This guy, by the way, Gail, he's just kind of a stereotypical stoner, skinny guy, Bob Marley poster, really long hair. He also has an obsession of buying Hot Wheels and other toys on eBay. And he's trying to buy this Weevil for $300, but the eBay auction closes and he can't get it. Hank is just stressed out and he sees that Gail is smoking a joint, but Hank just thinks it's a fancy cigarette that he rolled himself because Hank. And Hank's like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. So he pulls out one of his cigarettes and he pulls out his lighter and he can't get a light. And he's like, oh, can I get a light off of you? And Gail gives him his joint and Hank's like, oh, this weird looking cigarette. Oh, the flame's really weak on it. So he proceeds to puff it. And he's like, oh, is this one of those clove cigarettes? He's like, nah, it's the Chronic from Mexico. And he's like, damn, NAFTA. This is clearly an inferior tobacco. And then Gail's like, so does your wife party too? And Hank's like, oh, we throw a party at 4th of July and Labor Day. It's like, no, I mean, does she like to get stoned? And then Hank kind of figures out what happened and he realizes that he smoked marijuana and he's freaking out. At Sugarfoot's, the cops have arrived and, you know, they've put up the police tape and everything. And the sheriff is interviewing Peggy and getting her statement. She's like, yeah, you heard the gunshot around 6:45 and you discovered the body around 6:47. She's like, uh-huh, yeah, most of it. They're trying to piece together what happened. They're like, yeah, Debbie is Mr. Strickland's mistress and she died where they reconciled. So, that, you know, the cop is kind of coming up with his own story of what happened. Back at Debbie's, we see Hank is just trying to vomit. He's just hugging the toilet. Nothing's happening, but he's hugging the toilet. And he's like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, I am inducing vomiting. But you just had one puff. And he's just going. And as he's trying to throw up, his lighter falls out of his front pocket. He goes to the mirror and he's like, oh, God, my eyes are bloodshot. They aren't. And I'm doped out of my gourd. And he runs right out and he tries to get in the car. But he's too frantic, so he can't get the key into the ignition. But now he's thinking, oh, wow, I'm too high to drive. I'm going to try to sleep it off. And he just tries to pass out in the bushes by the apartment complex. Back at Sugarfoot's, they are going through the garbage can. They find Ms. Liz's gun, the shotgun that Buck has that has Ms. Liz engraved on it. And one of the Texas Rangers comes by and says, yeah, I could send it back up to Dallas and get some prints on it. And the local sheriff is upset. Who called the Texas Rangers? And Peggy's like, hello, I really love you on Walker. So yeah, it was Peggy Hill who called. Hank starts running towards Sugarfoot's and he's like, why am I running? Oh no, I'm talking to myself. This must be a side effect of the marijuana poisoning. And then as he runs up to the, as he runs by Sugarfoot's, he notices that the cops are there, and he's like, oh no, Debbie's roommate must have turned me in or something. And the cops keep saying like, hey, Mr. Hiller. And Bobby's like, Hank, and Hank's trying to avoid them. But then Peggy just yells, Hank, at the top of her lungs. And so Hank shows up, and, you know, they tell him that Debbie's dead, and he's freaking out, and, you know, he's shocked, and the cops want to ask him questions, but Hank's not even really thinking about the death. What he's really concerned about is the fact that he's high and he doesn't want to get arrested for being high. Though he only took one puff, and not even a good puff either, so the idea of him being high is just ridiculous. But anyway, he's like, oh, I can't talk. Debbie was an important coworker, and I'm just really upset and need to mourn, and Peggy, can you drive me home? Because I'm just too sad to drive, which of course sounds suspicious. So the cop's getting a little suspicious. In the alley, the guys are talking as always. And Dale's like, yep, the coroner will get to the bottom of this mystery. He did two autopsies on my friends from the gun club. And then Hank's like, do you think they'll want to drug test all of her coworkers? And Dale's like, oh yeah, they're going to drug test the entire city. The price of a bag of clean urine will double. And then, of course, Bill chimes in, how much will poo go? And he's like, unchanged. So this is actually how I would expect Hank to react if he got high. He's just acting like the worst thing in the world happened, which it didn't, obviously. Like, no, okay, yeah, I get it. Being high kind of makes you uncomfortable or whatever. And it is illegal in Texas, especially in small town Texas in the 90s. They're, or I guess this would have been like the year 2000, but they wouldn't have been too lenient on him. But at the same time, like, I don't even know if one puff would even register if he did like a pee test or whatever.
But it's Hank, you know, so of course he's high. You know what? Maybe Hank is high, you know, being such a like straight and narrow person, though he does drink a lot. You know, it's confusing. Hank confuses me a lot sometimes.
I mean, they do affect different parts of the brain, though. So I don't think, I mean, they do definitely affect the brain, but I think in different ways. So I think you can get drunk and handle your beer, but maybe not necessarily handle pot. I'm by no means like an expert on it, but I do think they affect your, like the effect of being high and the effect of being drunk, while they're both messing you up, they're not the exact same feeling. So,
oh, I just mean like, Hank's not a straight edge. It's like he seems to be, you know, oh, like yeah, holding a joint, he freaks out. But I mean, like, you know, it's not like you're not day drinking, Hank.
That's fair. But yeah, it is funny. He doesn't even realize it's a joint, which I guess would maybe make sense because I highly doubt Hank's probably even seen a joint in real life. So, you know, he probably just naturally thought it was a cigarette. And also he's such a straight and narrow guy that he probably just didn't cross his mind that the roommate is smoking pot. He might have just been like, oh, he's smoking a cigarette, whatever. That's at least my fan theory.
It is interesting, though, that he doesn't snap out of it. I don't know. Have you, like, I don't know. At least for me, like, I've been, like, really drunk. And then someone will say something to me. And then I'll just, like, quickly, like, you know, your brain switches. Like, oh, now I got to really think. And, like, I feel like when they said, like, Debbie's been murdered, then your brain would, like, switch and be like, yeah, focus on this.
No, I think he was just, to be honest, I think he was just more freaked out about the fact that he smoked weed than he was actually high. Like, I don't think he was, like, when he was like, oh, I'm so high, I can't drive my truck. I think he couldn't get the keys into it because he was just freaking out and shaking so much, not because he was high, but, you know, that's...
Or just, I mean, like, just because he was shocked. I don't know. I feel like he should have reacted more, but I guess Hank didn't really care about Debbie.
I mean, I think he's upset about it, but I feel like, I guess at this point he's thinking like, I'm not going to stick around and talk to the cops because they're going to find out that I'm high and they're going to arrest me and I'm going to be in jail for 20 years or whatever. So that's kind of the gist I'm getting. It's not that he doesn't care about Debbie as much as like he's really trying to avoid getting in trouble. The next day at Strickland, you'll notice that the flag is actually at half mast. So, you know, I guess that's nice. they show Debbie's desk, and there's a bunch of pictures of her and flowers, and you're thinking, oh, they decorated her desk because they miss her and stuff. And Hank's like, wow, she really bought a lot of flowers before she died. Now that Debbie is gone, Miss Liz is letting Buck Strickland come back, and Buck Strickland is back in charge. And he's like, you know, everybody's pointing fingers at me, and, you know, I didn't do it. I want the murderer caught just as much as anybody else. So if you have any facts, well, you know, just come and tell me before we, you know, talk about the police, talk to the police and figure out what to do with that information. As Buck walks into his office, he sneakily rips the name tag off of Hank's jacket. At the Hill House, we see Hank, he's washing his clothes, and he's like, okay, I washed this shirt a dozen times. What do you think, Lady Bird? Can you still smell the Mary Jane? And she just kind of sniffs it. She doesn't even react. She just sniffs it, but Hank just takes that as like an implicit, oh, yes, she does smell it. So he's like, I got to get rid of it. So he sneaks the shirt into the backyard and throws it in the grill and tries to burn it. Just at that point in time, Sheriff Mumford shows up and asks, oh, what are you cooking there? And he's like, oh, nothing. He's like, well, my eyes aren't what they used to be, but isn't that smoke coming out of there? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm cooking burgers. Strange smelling burgers. What kind of herbs are you using? And Hank's thinking to himself, like, herbs? That's street talk for marijuana. The sheriff came back. He's like, yeah, we just got back collecting evidence at Casa Linda, and I'm here to let you know that you're a suspect. And Hank's like, oh, God, in the murder of Debbie Grun. And he's like, oh, okay, that. Oh, no. So, like, I guess at first he was going to think, oh, you're a suspect of smoking marijuana or whatnot, which I don't think, I don't know what the laws are, but I don't think they can arrest you after the fact. Like, I thought they could only arrest you if they catch it on your person.
Yeah. Not that I know too much about this, but yeah, as if you don't have it on you, they can't really do anything about it. Like, even if you reek of it, they can search you, but like, if they don't find anything, they can't arrest you. And just a heads up, yeah, you know, if anyone is like, I don't know, suffering or has to go to the hospital for emergency, you can tell the hospital whatever you've been doing. Like, you won't get in trouble unless you still have it on you. But like, you know, so Hank has nothing to worry about.
Yeah, generally speaking, the hospital and the doctor care more about you getting better than ratting you out to the cops. Now, granted, I guess if like something happens, they might be obligated to report it or something. But then there's HIPAA laws, so unless the cops subpoena it. I'm just speculating. I'm by no means a lawyer, so don't take anything I'm saying. But I will say what Jimmy says. If you are doing something illegal, you get sick, and you have to go to the hospital, please be honest with the doctors. Like, you're not doing yourself any favors by trying to lie about what happened. After the break, we're in the Hill House, and Hank and Peggy are in bed, and Hank's, you know, trying to tell Peggy that he's not guilty, and, you know, Peggy's like, yeah, but, you know, it was something interesting that the sheriff said. He kept talking about your motive, your relationship with Miss Liz. He kept using that term, relationship with Miss Liz, and Hank brings up the whole fraudulent propane call, and when he went to the house, she was wearing a kimono, and she wanted him to service her accessories, not the propane. And Peggy's like, oh, okay. So combined with that motive and the fact that you don't have an alibi, it might make sense that you would kill Debbie so that Miss Liz would go back to Buck. And Hank's like, are you reading those rabbi mysteries again? And Peggy's like, oh, they do work, but you know, let me play devil's advocate for now. They did say that they found your badge in the bushes near the Sugarfoots. He's like, what? I don't remember losing my badge. It's like, yeah, you didn't take it off. It was torn off as if in a struggle. And Hank runs and checks his work shirt and realizes there's no name tag on there and just like the leftover threads and stuff. And Peggy's like, so what I got to ask you, Hank, is why didn't you tell me about Ms. Liz? Hank goes to Arlen High, and he wants to talk to the guidance counselor because he's trying to get information about drugs, because obviously Hank knows nothing about marijuana other than it's bad. So he's talking to the guidance counselor, and he's like, you know, he's trying to learn everything about drugs. And he's like, so if my son comes here to high school, God willing, he could get baked and leave his name tag in in the bushes and stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. I once went to prison with a guy who killed a guy he didn't even know he killed. Which is funny because, like, that's law. I didn't commit the crime kind of thing. Yeah, it's called blacking out. And Hank's like, oh, so somebody could black out on marijuana and kill their coworker. And the guidance counselor is like, coworker, cab driver, prostitute, doesn't matter who. Which, I'm not an expert, but I think marijuana is one of the few drugs that it makes you more calm than anything else. I just can't imagine somebody getting stoned and wanting to kill somebody.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine someone getting really high and then, like, well, I don't know. I've seen people eat, like, too much edibles.
I guess.
And then they, like, not that they're trying to kill someone, but I mean, like, if you don't have your bearings, though you are right. You're mostly mellow. Not that I know. Not that speaking from experience.
Bath salts or whatever, you know, those crazy drugs we'll talk about, those cause you to go crazy and start ripping people's heads off. But I feel like, you know, everything they say about it, it's just like, oh, I just, you know, you just get really happy and hungry and sleepy. I think that's like a Cat Williams joke where he talks about, like, Tylenol's a drug too, and if you take a whole bottle of them, that's going to be your last headache ever. But you've never heard of anybody overdosing on marijuana. The only side effects are happy, hungry, and sleepy. So I don't know, but it is kind of funny because how oblivious Hank is on this drug, which I think is kind of telling of the early 2000s, where people still, not everywhere, but a lot of people still totally believe the whole marijuana is the deadliest drug ever. And if you smoke it, you're going to be a loser living under a bridge and stuff, but whatever. And now here Hank thinks it's going to actually make you kill somebody. So we go to Sugarfoot's, and Hank is driving there, and he has a bag of sand because he's trying to, like, you know, this bag of sand weighs roughly what Debbie would have weighed, and he's trying to think, like, okay, well, does this action seem familiar? And he's like, maybe. And all of a sudden, Buck shows up, and he's like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? Returning to the scene of the crime? And Hank's like, oh, no, just throwing, you know, some old sand away. And he's like, okay, Colin, let's take a ride, your truck. And they get into Hank's truck and they drive to the quarry because it will be very quiet there. While they're driving, Buck plants a shotgun shell in Hank's truck. While they're in the quarry, Hank's like, I want you to know, Buck, I didn't kill Debbie. And then Buck's like, oh, I really love that girl. And he's like, well, if you've taken me out here to kill me, it would probably be premature. As Buck turns his back, he has like a tape recorder taped to his body, trying to goad Hank, and he's like, oh, but, you know, you were mad at Debbie, weren't you? And he's like, what? He's like, you were mad at Debbie. Yes, yes, I was mad because she was going to tell my wife that we had sexual relations. And Buck's like, okay, that's all I needed, which I guess is suspicious, but whatever. On the way back, Buck puts, like, the tape in an envelope and throws it at the front door of the police station. And he also says, you know, check Hank's truck on the envelope. On the drive home, though, Hank finds the shell and he's like, what's this? A shotgun shell. So then we cut over to Hank's house and he's in Bobby's room and he's like, I want you to promise me that you will never do drugs. And Bobby's like, I promise. Like, no, really don't do drugs. Like, even if a junkie gives you a joint and you think it's a cigarette, which you shouldn't be smoking either. And he's like, I promise that I won't. Promises me nothing. And Bobby's like, no, Dad, you tell me that drugs are for losers and I don't want to disappoint you. Besides, I want to be the first chubby comic to live past 35. Yeah, Buck is definitely trying to frame Hank, which kind of upsets me because Hank's been so loyal to him. But Buck is Buck. What can I say?
I mean, can we really? Sometimes I always think about the, like, Buck that Hank knew versus the Buck we know today. Like, when you think about Buck Strickland, you got to remember he was a guy who built a business out of nothing, basically, and, like, pulled True. Hank in. And then I feel like over time he became really, like, he changed. But in Hank's mind, he's always that original guy. So, you know, you and I would know not to trust Buck Strickland. Like, you know, trust, what does it say? I trust you as far as I can throw you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be the saying, like, here. But Hank still remembers Buck in, like, the old days. So, There's that. But you know what? A lot of chubby comedians have lived past 35, just saying. But after that, I don't know.
You're not wrong. A lot have lived longer. I mean, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but you are right. A lot have.
You're not an expert on chubby comics living over 35. What are you going to do when that Jeopardy category comes up?
A few have. Like, what was his name? The one you really liked. Louis Anderson. Louis Anderson lived to like 60.
Yeah. Oh, 60? Oh, no.
I think he did. Like, he definitely made it past 35. That's for sure. But I think, didn't he die like 2 years ago or something?
He died. No, wait, really? Oh, he died in 2022. 68.
So close to 70. He died this year. Yeah, so he made it pretty while. He made it pretty far.
Oh, Life with Louis is such a great show. I recommend it. If you can find it. Gosh, they need to put it somewhere. But yeah, Louis Anderson.
Yeah, he was on Baskets too. So we're back at the Hill House. They're all on the lawn. Peggy's setting up table. Hank's getting ready to cook and stuff. Sheriff comes up and, you know, checks in with Hank. And is like, oh, you know, Mrs. Hill, can you leave? I want to tell Hank a dirty joke. And Peggy knows that the cop wants her to leave because he wants to talk about the murder investigation with Hank. But, you know, Peggy's like, oh, you know, I know what you want to talk about. And anything you could say to Hank, you could say to me. We're open like that. And he's like, all right. And he tries to offer a cigarette to Hank. And Hank's like, oh, I don't smoke. And, you know, she's like, good, dirty habit. Hey, do you have a lighter? And Hank's like, oh, I can go and check in the house. He's like, oh, no, don't worry. I've got one. He pulls out the silver lighter from his pocket. And he's like, hey, look, it has HRH in it. I got this from Debbie's apartment. What is your middle name? And Hank's like, Rutherford. It's like, oh, so unless it was His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales visiting Debbie, this must be your lighter. And he says, yeah, it was a gift from Ms. Liz. But now at this point, Hank's feeling nervous, so he's asking for a cigarette. And then Peggy's like, oh, I know all about Miss Liz and stuff. And he's like, oh, well, do you know about his relationship with Debbie? And Hank's like, I don't have a relationship with Debbie. He's like, yeah. And then he plays back the tape of him telling Buck about, oh, Debbie threatened to tell me that I had sexual relations with her. And then Hank denies that he ever did that. And the cop just leaves. And then he's like, I told you all about Miss Liz being naked. It's like, did you see her breasts? And Peggy's really upset. And all of a sudden, Khan shows up. And it's like, hey, Charlie Manson, can you autograph this dirty Sugarfoot's napkin that if you're the killer, I'll auction it on eBay, be worth a lot. And then that's when kind of Hank realizes that, oh, eBay, that's like something I can check. So he goes to Gail's apartment, Debbie's old apartment, and has Gail check eBay to when the bid was lost or when the bid ended, because that's around the time that Hank's puffed the marijuana. And he's like, yeah, the auction closed at 6:58 p.m. And he's like, oh, well, that means I didn't smoke until 7 p.m. at the earliest. So Debbie would have been dead by then already. So there's no way I could have killed her. And Gail's like, yeah, just tell him you were getting high with me. I'll back you up. And he's saying it in all sincerity, like he's not being facetious. Hank leaves. The sheriff sees him leaving from the get out. And he's, you know, kind of suspicious. Then the Texas Ranger comes out of the get out and, you know, it's kind of like this jurisdiction making fun of each other thing. So it's the sheriff's like, oh, you're out really quick. Did you get the candy bars to break? How about the Three Musketeers? Maybe if you separate them into different rooms, they'll talk. And then the Texas Ranger is like, oh, you're funny. How did Hee-Haw ever get rid of you? I do like, I don't know. I think it's funny how, to me, it's weird. The cop is clearly ruining the investigation. Why is he able to just walk around with evidence in his pocket? And why isn't it in like an evidence locker somewhere? Why is he able to walk around with the lighter in his pocket? And then why is he like, now that's not going to be admissible in court because they won't be able to get fingerprints on it or anything. And I know I'm overthinking the cartoon. Why would, you know, if he's building a case against Hank, why would he inform him that he's building a case? Why isn't he actually brought Hank into the police station to question him? I don't know. It's just funny that how they're doing this investigation.
This is true. I don't know. I guess it's always that was it, that cliche of the sloppy cop handling an investigation when you're the suspect.
Yeah, I guess so. But it just, I don't know. It really, and again, I'm thinking way too much about it because it is a cartoon. But it's still like, oh man, come on, this would never fly. Hank, even if they did arrest Hank, they soiled it so much that he would get out of it. So we go back to the Hill House, and it's breakfast time. And again, the cop just pops in to have a chat with Hank. And the cop's like, do I smell Piggy Hill's old-fashioned buttermilk griddle cakes? And Peggy's like, oh, you didn't come all the way over here just to have Peggy Hill's old-fashioned buttermilk griddle cakes? And he's like, guilty. And Sheriff's like, I was just talking to Debbie's roommate, Gail, and he has an interesting alibi. Said you guys were sparking up a J. And Peggy's like, wait, what in English, please? And he said, lighting up a J. And then Peggy immediately knows what that means. And she's like, well, you have another crime to investigate, the attempted assassination of my husband's character. And then Bobby's upset too. My dad would never smoke pot. And Hank's like, well, you heard the boy. And Sheriff is like, yeah, you're about as square as a block of wood. But this Gale character, what a weirdo. He's from up north. He has long hair all the way up to his butt and a layer of filth that just doesn't wash off. Now, after talking to you, I know he's a liar without an alibi. Cut over to the next night, and Luann runs in. It's like, they're arresting the murderer. They're arresting the murderer. They go on, they look at the TV, and it's like, that's no woman. That's Debbie's roommate. And Luann's like, oh, no, of course there's a woman. Her name's Gail. You hear the sheriff talking about the arrest, and he's like, oh, this is a part of my new record. You know, this is I have never failed in a homicide investigation. I am 2 for 2 now. Naturally, Hank is upset because he knows there's no way Gail could have done it, because Gail and him were together when the murder happened and they were in the apartment getting high. But then Peggy's just, well, being Peggy, she's like, show Peggy's sugarfoots in the background. Show Peggy's sugarfoots in the background. Yes. In the alley, the guys are talking, and Hank's like saying, you know, that guy they arrested, I'm just not so sure he did it. And Bill's like, the sheriff arrested him, so it means he's guilty. I've served on 4 juries, and I did my job, 4 convictions. And Hank's like, your job as a juror is not to convict. And Bill's like, yes, it is. They're back at Sugarfoot's. Peggy's sign is gone. It's now under old management. And it looks the way it did. So, man, that was a quick turnaround. Buck is creating I guess this is kind of like a case closed dinner that he's hosting for everybody. And the sheriff throws shade at Ranger Peyton for not being able to solve the case. Bobby's like, I hope Gail doesn't get off on some pothead technicality. Right, Dad? He's like, yeah, of course he's got a technicality. It's called the Bill of Rights, son. And sheriff's like, the only right he has is a right arm for the lethal injection. And everybody starts laughing. And now Hank's just upset. And he slams his fist down on the table. And he says, all right, that's enough. Gail didn't do it, because he was with me at the time of the murder. We were at Debbie's apartment. And like he said, we were smoking pot. And Peggy is shocked, like, who are you? And he's like, I didn't know it was pot. And you know I didn't enjoy it, but it's true. He was with me. So the sheriff thinks it's Buck, and it's like, and Buck's like, no, it wasn't. It was Hank. And yeah, didn't you get my tape? Didn't you check the car and all the stuff? So he's kind of owning up to the fact that he was framing. Then the cop's like, well, then it was Miss Liz. He's like, okay, it was me. And so the cop arrests Buck. But then Peyton stands up and says, well, if you guys are all done making a noise, I can tell you exactly what happened. So before we do the reveal, I do like that Hank, I mean, it upsets me that it took Hank this long to get around to it, but I do like that Hank eventually did stand up.
Yeah, I don't think Hank could have lived with the guilt. Even if it is Gail, like, he still knows an innocent man is going to jail. Like, Hank isn't that kind of guy.
Yeah, Hank is, I think Hank was at first selfish because he didn't want anybody knowing he was smoking pot. But at the same time, he was like, I can't let a person who could not have possibly done it. I know for a fact he couldn't do it because he was with me when it happened. So I can't let him die or be jailed or arrested for a murder he couldn't have committed. So I guess at least he did come across and do the right thing, but it's a shame that it took him that long to do it, but hey, he did it. Obviously, he didn't like it. He must have been tricked. I mean, we know he was tricked, but I'd imagine everybody else should know that too, because Hank's just not the type of person to smoke pot. So for anybody to think that he is a pot smoker is just, I don't know, it's just weird. So now let's go ahead and see what actually happened. So the ranger comes up and he says that he figured it all out. So at 6 p.m. last night, Debbie was at home. That's what the phone record shows. She called Hank and whatnot, and she would have looked out the window. Normally, if she looked out the window, she would have seen Sheriff Mumford shoving ribs into his face. But this time, he would have actually seen the two Stricklands going into the restaurant and whatnot. So seeing them together and seeing that they are probably reconciled threw her into a rage. And so she decided she needed to do something about it. Peyton says she went down to Sugarfoot's, and then Peggy pipes up and says, that's Peggy's Sugarfoot's at the time. And Peyton's like, yeah. Well, she went down to Sugarfoot's and she intended to kill Buck. So, you know, she went to the dumpster and sat there with the shotgun that he had left at her apartment and was waiting for him to come out. But, you know, standing in a dumpster full of barbecue is going to make you hungry. So she decided to bounce and went to the get in, get out. There she was able to get a big gulp and a 99-cent nacho plate. By buying them together, she saved 23 cents. And then Bobby says, my God. And then you can see on the surveillance tape that this is like at 6:41 p.m. When she returned, she saw that Buck's Cadillac was still there. So just assumed that Buck was still there. She didn't realize that they'd already left, but in Ms. Liz's car, after reconciling in the storeroom, the meat locker, and the slop stink. So she was trying to get in the dumpster and juggle the gun and the chips and the drink and stuff. So, you know, she decides to kind of split it up. So she puts the gun in first and tries to climb in, but her leg hits the hammer and she shoots herself. So Debbie Grunz's killer is Debbie Grunz. So Miss Liz is like, oh, I thought you, I'm glad it wasn't you. I thought you'd killed it. And he's like, I would have killed her too, but I thought you did it. That's why I planted evidence against Hank. And then he's like, oh, sorry, Hank. I was under a lot of stress. And Hank's like, well, yeah, if my mistress was dead and my wife was a suspect, yeah. He's like trying to find a way to accept the apology, but he's just not happy about it. But I guess in a sense, he's also upset. He's just also happy that it's over. And then he talks to Bobby. And he's like, oh, Bobby, I'm sorry I let you down. And Bobby's like, you know, if it were me, you would punish me. I think I should get a punishment for you. And Hank's like, all right, what punishment do you have for me? And he's like, you can't mow your lawn for 1 week. And Hank's like, oh, come on, it was an accident. Bobby's like, you want to go for two? And the episode ends. I do kind of like, I don't know if the like is the right term, but it is funny that it wound up being her killing herself, which would also explain why there was little actual evidence.
Yeah, I always enjoyed the twists. Like, I didn't ever saw it coming. I really did think it was going to be another random character or something like that. But I mean, it's sad that Debbie's gone, but I think the best is that she went out on her own. That way every character still stays clean. Like, you don't want that on anyone. Not in King of the Hill.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want... I mean, I guess if it wound up being just like an incredibly random person, maybe that'd make it a little better. Just virtue of the fact that it's like, oh, yeah, it was some random out-of-towner who did it or something. But I guess it is good that it was her. It wasn't like Buck or somebody else who's now who is now a bad person or now a murderer. So I guess that's a nice thing.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, I do enjoy watching these two episodes. These are good episodes. I mean, they're on the list because we like them. I wouldn't say they're my top favorite, but I feel like they are in a better spot because of the memories I have watching them. Like, these are very two distinct episodes that I remember watching live. And I think that's what holds a spot in my heart for these two specifically.
Yeah, that's usually how it works. You know, I do remember watching it live as well. And it's also just an episode, like, even though, you know, it's a twist ending and it's a whodunit kind of thing. And after you've already seen it, you already know who it is. It's still a fun episode to watch over and over again. One, it's funny to watch Hank just freak out over getting high. And also, it's just, I don't know. That. So to me, that's the funniest thing, is watching Hank freak out over getting high. But it's also just kind of funny to, I don't know. It shows what kind of person Buck is, for one. And I don't know. I would not be so quick to forgive him. I guess just Hank being Hank is like trying to find a way to make an excuse for him. But I wouldn't be forgiving him.
I mean, Buck's always doing something like, you know, I guess this is an extreme, but Buck has left Hank in very crazy situations before, and he will in the future. So I think that's just kind of, I don't want to give Buck a pass, but that's that thing where it's like, oh, that's just Buck, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this is like, there's a difference between making Hank pick him up from jail and him trying to frame him for a murder he didn't commit.
I mean, that's just Buck, right? I mean, but he framed him because, you know, he didn't want Liz to go, like, he didn't want his wife to go to jail. So that's sweet, right?
I guess, you know, in a very weird way. I don't know. I'm having a hard time trying to forgive Buck, but I guess so. I don't know. I still like the episode. It is one of the earlier episodes, and we all know how much I love the earlier episodes. I just love, my favorite thing of this episode is just how Hank reacts to smoking a joint. Because, like, that's, I would say that's like, I don't know, it's hard to say. I would say that's the A story, and the death is the B story. Like, even in the title, it's called High Anxiety, which kind of, I think, talks about the pot and everything. So I feel like that's the A story in a way.
Well, yeah, I mean, Debbie's death definitely takes a backseat to everything else.
Exactly, they do. I mean, her death does take backseat, because everybody's concerned about her. It's you know, we don't even see much of the investigation. We just see them screwing with Hank on everything, and Hank thinking that he got high and killed her and all that stuff. Like, definitely him being high was the A story. So it's just fun seeing him, like, react to all that stuff and deal with it. But yeah, that's all I've got on this episode. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, not that, you know, I guess you already spoiled it, but it's a fun two-parter.
Mm-hmm. It is one of the better ones. I think there's only about three, or I can definitely think of three off the top of my head, two-parters that we have. No, I can think of four. I can at least think of four, but there might be more. This is definitely one of the better two-parters in my head. See, so just in time for Thanksgiving, well, post-Thanksgiving, Black Friday, whatever you want to call it, Cyber Monday, we will be doing 9 Pretty Darn Angry Men next time, and we might even have a guest speaker. Let's see. Till then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.